so many of you joining us. I'm Linda Leakley, Chief Clinical Officer at HCP.
And I'm Amanda Sprinklar, our Director of Marketing.
And you are listening to Vision. It's the podcast for leaders and forward thinkers in the care industry. And today we're going to discuss, it's a big topic, the top five challenges the care industry is facing and how agencies can respond. Now, to tackle this big subject, we are so lucky to be joined by Kristen Wheeler. Many of you probably know her. In the healthcare industry since 1990 and in home care since 2006, Kristen is currently the Executive Director of Private Duty Services at NAC. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies. I really appreciate the invite. I love being here.
It's great to have you. Before we dive in, I just wanted to remind everyone listening that you can be the first to hear these episodes by joining us for Vision Live every other Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can go to homecarepulse.com/podcast to register. While you're there, you can also find all of our previous episodes, or you can find them wherever you listen to podcasts. For folks who are joining us live right now, we'll have some time where you'll be able to ask questions of Kristen a little bit later, and you're also welcome to add them in the chat at any time. And when we pause, we can ask them out loud. Kristen, thank you again so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background in the industry? Before NAC, what did that look like?
So yeah, it's kind of a strange little journey. That's not to quote the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but it is October after all. So I think for it happens for a lot of us that we just sort of find ourselves in private duty home care. Like it's bizarre, but you just end up there, right? So I worked way back when I got into health in the healthcare industry itself. I was in fundraising and event management for a large not-for-profit healthcare system in Southeast Michigan, way back when. And my husband and I moved to Key West in 2005, and he went to work for a certified home health agency and hospice organization down there. About a year after we moved there, they invited me to come to work with them and start their what they called their private duty program. And I know before I even go any further with the words private duty, I'd like to just say that when I use the words private duty, I use them as all encompassing, with whether it's skilled private duty care or just homemaking and companionship. I use that term as a bucket blanket for all of it, just to be on the safe side. I know that different parts of the country call private duty different things. So bear with me until we come up with a better phrase for the whole industry. But in any case, so I went to work for a certified agency, started their private duty program, ultimately spun off and opened my own home care agency that was specifically non-medical home care only. Then went to work after a few years. I sold out my part of the business, went to work for the Home Care Association of Florida as their director of private duty services. And then earlier this year, came to work with NAC as the executive director of private duty there. So it's been a long, winding road. I'm just full of quotes today.
Linda's laughing because we were having the same discussion about how to refer to private duty care in...
We were
a couple hours ago.
Terminology.
it's a huge deal because it's so state specific, and that's the thing about private duty at its core, right? That it's very state specific. You can't look at private duty from a federal point of view necessarily. There are certainly some things that translate across all states from a federal perspective, but by and large, it's by the state. So, you know, every state calls things just a tiny bit differently, and then don't even get me started on how many states don't license it at all. So that's a whole nother podcast.
I hear you. As a nurse educator, yeah.
Right? I bet.
And you've also, Kristen, worked with the Home Care Workforce Alliance. Can you tell folks a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Home Care Workforce Action Alliance, its official title, or HCWA, if you like, HCWA, was a collaborative effort between NAC and the Home Care Association of America. You know, our two presidents, Bill Dombey and Vicki Hogue, really realized that we can't really work in silos anymore. This crisis is not going away. everyone that's involved in the industry has to partner together to solve this crisis. And in an effort to do this, the Alliance was born. So so they came together, or we all came together earlier this summer to create and identify four individual work groups, two that will focus on home care aides or direct care workers, or again, that's another title that everybody calls something different. And then two that will focus on nurses and the shortage there, to come up with some really actionable steps to move forward and try and solve some of this.
Okay, and from what I understand from the website, you've identified five critical issues that are affecting the industry right now. So if we kind of go one by one on these issues, can you give a brief rundown of these five problems? And well, let's start with the big one, employee shortages.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we've already said it, because you can't talk for 5 minutes in the healthcare industry or in the workforce industry at all without talking about how everybody's looking for staff, right? But so the five issues that were identified from the Alliance are really all very intermingled. It's a very chicken sort of egg situation. But obviously we have a critical shortage of frontline healthcare workers. For us and anybody that's been in the industry from before COVID, we all know that this was a problem pre-pandemic, but it's certainly been punctuated now. Providers are reporting something like 50% of referrals are being turned down at this point solely because they can't staff them, not because it's, you know, it's not a case that they're comfortable with, or they can't go that far, or it's an area they're not in. This is simply because they can't staff it. So that's just massive, just a huge, huge problem.
Let's talk about compensation and how that fits into the picture.
Sure. So compensation, again, notoriously low for, and if everybody on today or who's listening is involved in home care, again, preaching to the choir, notoriously low in home care. Wages really need to be lined up with the value of the role. And we're going to talk about value of this population again in just a little bit. But I think that's sort of the bottom line. But if you look at, say, so let's take nursing wages first. You look at nursing wages in home care, generally speaking, and Home Care Pulse obviously has great data to support this, but nursing wages are, any nurse could go work in a facility, whether that's a hospital, a skilled nursing facility, whatever, and generally make more money. So it's really, we really have to look at other areas of why it's so much better to work in home care. What's more rewarding about it? What's better about the flexibility of it? Any number of things, right? The same is true for home health aides and caregivers. Many areas, these workers are still being paid minimum wage. So again, leaves very, very little incentive to come into the industry at all. When you can look at, okay, so if I can make, let's just use a round number, 10 bucks working for this home health agency, or I can make 10 bucks at the Gap, maybe I'll go work at the Gap. You know, so it's just, we need to be a little bit more creative here.
Well, so that sort of leads into the next bucket, if you will, of the five, mm-hmm. which is training issues, my passion. So yeah. Let's hear your take on that.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear, feel free to jump in too, Lynn. My goodness, I know you've got plenty of experience here, but I, you know, certainly there absolutely needs to be more opportunities for these folks to develop, to improve their skill set. Study after study shows that more home care workers are incentivized by career opportunities or career ladders, if you will, just as much or nearly as much, at least, as compensation. It's not just all about compensation, though compensation is very important. But you see the providers that offer continuing education or other opportunities like that, and they're the ones that end up keeping the staff the longest.
You know, Kristen, we hear a lot these days from folks that we talk to at HCP, agency owners and managers, who say that they just need compliance training, that all their staff, all their employees, all they want is compliance training. They don't want to deal with anything else. How do you respond to that?
So I think that it's, I think that more agency owners and more employers need to get to know their staff a little bit better. Maybe there are some folks out there that's all they're interested in, or does that really just boil down to, we're talking to a business owner that wants to do the bare minimum and say, okay, so OSHA says I have to do this, so I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Or my state standards say I have to do X and that's all I'm gonna do. And so I'm offering education. That's bottom line. I get it, right? I get it. I was an agency owner. It was a small agency. My census was only around 120. And I did most everything by myself. So when you're talking about that kind of perspective of like, I don't have time to worry mm-hmm. about this. Well, you don't have time not to anymore. Unfortunately, you just somehow or other that you've got to find ways to incentivize these people, especially the rock stars that you find, because you know, we've all found some where you just will do anything you can to keep them. Well, then that's what you have to do, is find the things that will make them stay.
Individualize training to some extent.
Exactly. Sure. Not every home care aide wants to go on to become a nurse, although some do. Not everyone wants to stay in this industry forever, although some do. So I was going to mention this towards the end. I'll throw in this sort of shameless plug now, more so because of how interesting it is, not because I'm trying to plug NAC. But we are just about ready to launch this incredibly fascinating data study that was done as a partnership between NAC and Mission Care Collective that identified several hundred data points among 67,000 home care, direct care workers. It ultimately identified 7 individual personas and dug way deep into the weeds on all the differences between these personas. And each of the 7 personas is recruited very differently, and each is retained very differently. And so once you see, it's super fascinating. Once you see this, you realize I've only been recruiting a certain, like one of these personas rather than 5 of these or whatever. So it's a total eye opener to really see that it's not a one size fits all anymore at all across the board. So we're formally releasing that this weekend at NAC's annual conference and expo.
That sounds fascinating. I can't wait to
it's really cool.
That myself.
Very excited for that.
Well, so that sort of leads to the next, which is the professional perception.
So professional perception, you know, and I think we can look at this as a sort of twofold, from the industry perspective and from the public perspective. Mm-hmm. Because the perception is incorrect on a number of levels on from both areas, right? From the public's perspective, and right now I'm talking about more of the home care aide population as opposed to the nursing mm-hmm. population, because when you call somebody a nurse, when you say she's a nurse, then people say, oh, okay, well, she's got a license and she went to mm-hmm. school, and you know, that's not the going thought when you talk about home health aides or personal care aides or certified nursing assistants. Certified nursing assistant gets a little bit of a bump, mm-hmm. but when if you talk about the caregiver homemaker population, you know, if you ask a client what their home health aide does or what their home health aide's title is, you'll get a whole host of responses, from mm-hmm. cleaning woman to housekeeper to grocery shopper to, you know, but it's so the perception is that's such, and I hate to say this, but it's such a low level of service. And it's really one of the most critical levels of service. That person spends the most amount of time with these clients or patients, or again, whatever they're being called, they know them more than any of their professional, like their therapist, their nurse, you know, not to discredit what therapists and nurses do because they're amazing. But I think the role of the caregiver absolutely has to be elevated. It is a professional job. Sure, maybe you don't have to go to school for years to learn how to do it, but you certainly do have to hone your skills over time to do it right and to be really good at it. And they're a huge part of the team, no matter how you cut it.
Absolutely. And as you know, I say that as a nurse who worked with direct care workers, CNAs, home health aides, companions, side by side with them. If you ask those clients or patients, would you like to give up, if you had to give up your nurse or your aide or your caregiver, which one would you choose? They'd probably say, I'll give up the nurse. I've got to have the caregiver, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, people understand the importance, but the professional respect is not there. And that's something I've been fighting for 25 years. With my training company to try to elevate, and now with HCP to elevate the professionalism of that population and give them the respect that they so richly deserve.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's getting there, but there's still a long road to hoe.
You know, it's also interesting when I, you know, back in the day first started nursing, you had to go to the hospital when you first graduated, right? It was, you got to start out in acute care, med surge. If you wanted to go to home health, you were thought of as not quite a nurse by the acute care nurses. So even among the nurses, sure. There was this,
Which is so crazy when you think about it. Like, I mean, I feel like, and I know I'm horribly biased, I understand, but I feel like working in home care is so much harder. There's no one there to ask. You're on your own. You have to know what you're doing to be able
to creative thinking, thinking outside the box. Absolutely.
Not to mention some of the houses you walk into and the state of things and the way that some people live. Like we all have those horror stories.
Yeah. You don't have a janitorial crew coming behind you.
Right. Exactly. Right. It's crazy.
So it's all part of perception. And I think it's a really important conversation, obviously, to continue. So the last bucket of the five is the impact on families.
Well, sure. And I think that it almost goes without saying, right? So like I mentioned earlier, we've got providers saying that they're turning down, you know, a full half of the referrals that they're getting because they can't staff them. So what does that mean for those families? You know, obviously they're having to look for alternate ways to care for this loved one. So many people are having to, you know, quit jobs or work less to take care of their own family members, et cetera, et cetera. So it's huge. I think the last number I saw that said that there would be an estimated need for 8.2 million more jobs to keep up with the demand of people aging. And I mean, obviously people want to stay home. You know, I mean, if the pandemic showed us nothing, it was that people don't want to go into facilities anymore. They want to age at home. No offense to the facilities, but people would prefer to stay home.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, we've talked a lot about the impacts of all of these individually, which is nothing to sneeze at. But when we combine all five of these issues that you've identified, how do you see them impacting the care industry as a whole?
Well, again, and I think I just sort of said it, you know, that with staying home is key. And I think that there needs to be ways that people can achieve that goal, to be able to age in place, to have some quality of life still in their own homes, and to be able to afford it. You know, home care can't just be for those that are wealthy enough to afford it. It can't. It's not right. It's not fair. People should have access to be able to stay in their homes. They've however they ended up with their own home, they worked for it one way or another, and it's theirs and they should be able to stay there. But if the workers aren't there, we're just not going to be able to sustain it.
Very well put. I feel like we've identified, you know, a lot of the issues, and frankly, a lot of the folks on this call are probably painfully aware of all of these, and may feel like it's kind of obvious. Can you speak a little more to why raising awareness of these issues is so important, even if it feels pretty obvious to agency owners and providers?
Well, I think that we need to make people that are potentially interested in even going into the industry aware that it's a viable career, that home care is rewarding and it can be something that people do for a living and can make a living. But I mean, we have to get there for certain levels. But in order to do that, then the opportunities, like I said earlier, for further education, for career ladders or pathways or whatever the case may be, they just need to be in place. And I think that the awareness on the industry level, like you said, Amanda, is already there. There can't possibly be somebody on the call today that isn't aware of it, that the
absolutely
workforce
shocked
issues aren't aware. Yeah. Like, what? I would love to see it. Shocking. I have so many staff, I don't know what to do with them. Yeah. I think it's the people that aren't quite sure about getting into the industry that we need to raise the awareness of, yes, there are issues, but there are ways to make it better. The other people that need to be made aware of it are legislators. And we can probably talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, well, and let's transition to that. You know, the Workforce Action Alliance is an advocacy group, right?
Absolutely.
So how can folks listening, agency owners, what can they do to help advocate for the changes that we have to do in order to continue?
Well, yeah, there are a number of legislative actions that are kind of floating around out there that have little legs under them, but they're not all there quite yet. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first way to, you know, start by urging your elected officials to support a number of these legislations. I don't know if you want me to mention each of the so I can, if you want me to talk about the various legislative items that are out there, potential legislation.
Sure. Yeah. Let's hear it.
So number one, and this was on NAC's priority list for our recent advocacy day on the Hill. One of our asks was to support the Better Care, Better Jobs Act. That legislation would permanently increase funding for home and community-based services through states' Medicaid programs by 10%. It would also require states to include personal care, family caregiver supports, and respite care among those services that are allowable. So it's the money follows the person, if you've heard that. Mm-hmm. So it would be through that FMAP funding that would happen. So that's the Better Care, Better Jobs Act. Otherwise, the other portion that we really need to look at and should probably talk about is immigration reform. It needs to be considered. Foreign-born citizens make up like 30% of the direct care workforce right now. So there are three, I think, potential legislation out there. There's Citizenship for Essential Workers Act, which would establish a mechanism. This would be for non-citizens who worked during the public health emergency as an essential worker. It would be a way for them to obtain permanent resident status. Then there's the Essential Workers for Economic Advancement Act, I believe. That would establish a new non-immigrant visa for temporary workers to fill jobs that have gone unfilled for some time. It does put a little bit of onus on the employer to require them. They have to show that they tried to fill those roles with U.S. workers and things like that. But that bill is out there. And then the Healthcare Workforce Resilience Act is a visa program for foreign-born nurses and physicians specifically to allow them, making it easier for them to practice in this country. So all of that could be looked at and considered to help ease some of this burden.
Okay, so let's say an agency owner isn't quite sure how to tackle being an advocate. What's the easiest step? How do you reach the right people?
Absolutely. Join either your state home care association. Every state has one. Join one of the national associations. Again, I will say that I'm biased because I am, but but by all means, that's what your association's main function is. We do a lot of other things besides just advocating, but all of us at our core are advocacy groups. We all have lobbyists that we work with. We all have I can't speak for everyone's website, but most I'm sure have easy ways to identify who your legislators are. Probably with a click or two, you can send an email off to your legislators encouraging support of various bills, whatever's being followed in your state.
So Kristen, I'm going to sound a little like a devil's advocate, just a little. What would you say to someone who said, well, November's coming up, things are going to change, none of these bills will pass, what's the point of all this? What do you say to people who are skeptical about really any change happening?
Well, I say that, you know, we're all voters, right? So so regardless of what industry you're in or what party lines you follow or whatever, we all have a voice. And I think skepticism just leads to complacency in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I say we're the only ones that can be that change, and squeaky wheels get heard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that we have to make enough noise. And finally, the noise is being made that, you know, like I said at the beginning of all of this, any of us that have been in this industry for any length of time, any longer than 2 years, let's just put it that way, knew that this was a problem a long time ago, right? It's always been a problem. Finally, the whole rest of the world realizes it's a problem. And finally, it's being looked at as if it's a very real problem. Part of it's probably because everybody's getting older and they're like, ooh, wait a second. Now I might need somebody. What are we going to do? Hold on. But yeah, I think that now is the time that we can actually affect this change. And if we don't do it now, we're going to be talking about this 20 years from now. And all of us will be sitting in our, you know, skilled nursing home talking to each other about it, like, boy, I wish I was home. So I think it's time for all of us to speak our minds and get out there and vote for some real change.
So be the squeak, be the squeaky wheel, huh?
Be the squeak. Yeah. I love that. We should trademark it.
Be the squeak you want to hear.
I love that. I think we'll get right on that. We'll make some images for this episode. I agree that it's extremely important not to get complacent and to think of yourself as part of the larger change. But while after they've agency owners and providers have done all of that, if they want to kind of look inward, work at a more micro level, if an agency wanted to do a self-evaluation, for example, what's the first area you'd recommend they look at and reconfigure? What can agencies do individually?
Well, and actually that brings up a really good point, Amanda, before I even try and tackle that answer. So, you know, maybe we can't affect change everywhere immediately, but what we can do is affect change in our own companies. And so to your question, I'd say first sort of look at your company culture, see what's going on. How are you showing your frontline workers that they are valued? Are you losing people at the same level as, you know, the statistic, the median is, whatever mm-hmm. that is, like half, isn't it? Is it half, like 50% of direct care workers leave annually or something like that? It's a huge number. I know that
it's a bit. it's a bit over that. I think it was in the mid-60s or low 60s this year.
Wow, it's crazy.
Turnover annually.
Right. So if you're anywhere near that number, you're seeing those kind of numbers, or if you're even higher than that, try, and it's a hard look, right? So you have to look at, especially if you're the owner of the business, it's really tough to look at your own stuff and say, what am I doing wrong here? Why don't these people love this place like I do? So you've got to ask yourself some of those really hard questions. But like I said earlier about the study that's coming out this weekend, maybe your employees all need something different from you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can talk about not having enough time to do those things, but that's somehow or other, you've got to find the time to identify how your folks each want to be valued, what makes them feel valued, what would make them want to be part of your group forever, or for as long as they're going to be with you, whatever the case may be, and just make sure that you're doing that. I remember way back in the day having a manager pass out like a little survey, and I'm sure it was still on paper, and we had to check off like ways that we like to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. And it was like a hug or a $5 gift card or, you know, random things. And we were all like, this is so dumb, but ultimately it sort of let that leadership know what everybody really was looking for. And I don't think it's the worst idea in the world to mm-hmm. take a look and say, okay, what can we do differently?
Yeah. And I think, talking to about, public perception and professional perception, I think that starts with all of us too, right? I think it's probably human nature when you're having trouble hiring or your staff is calling out at the last minute or, not showing up for interviews, to get really frustrated with the entire demographic of the people you're trying to hire. But that just ultimately hurts you or your agency, right? I mean, you've got to stay, have a positive perception. And like you say, treat people as individuals.
Right. And it's way easier said than done, but you have to sort of tuck away your biases, mm-hmm. where somebody walks in the door for an interview and they're not dressed exactly as you think that, they should be, or maybe they don't present as well as you would hope, or who knows what, but sort of dig a little deeper and see why this person's coming to you why this person is thinking about going into this field, if they've done things, before or whatever. But yeah, there's ways to keep people. There's just not one right answer.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Agreed.
I can see we're having some great discussion in the chat here of some other folks who are experiencing some of the legislative issues that you've brought up. If anyone has any questions that they'd like to ask, I'd like to open the floor now. You're welcome to put them in chat, or if you're feeling a little more brave, want to come off of mute, if you raise your hand, I can allow you to unmute and ask your question out loud.
Someone had her hand up earlier, it seems like.
Maybe that was when I said, raise your hand if you have no staffing issues.
No.
Whoever that was, I'd like them to be the next person on this podcast. If you want to hear all of their secrets.
Right. You're booked. You're booked for the next podcast. I was going to ask Kristen what your thoughts are about, you mentioned it, touched on it just briefly, but, and I'm sure you're simpatico with my thoughts, but on mentorship and career ladders.
Mentorship,
the value that they bring.
Yeah,
to
I think mentorship is so great. And if you can structure something like that it within your company, I think that's sort of the wave of the future. Mm-hmm. If you can, like I mentioned those rock star employees earlier, identify some of those to become your mentors, to mentee your newer staff or whatever the case may be. I think it's a great move when it works really, really well. It gives the mentors some, you know, some sort of personal connection with the company, and gives your new people, again, it's a time saver for you too, that you don't have to, you know, for lack of a better word, coddle all your new employees. If you've got someone that's sort of identified to take care of them and make sure that they, all of their questions are answered and any struggles they're having are handled, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure people could say, well, I don't have time. I hardly have one person to send to a client or a patient's house, let alone two.
Right.
But if you don't keep the one new one, then you're going to have to start all over again, right? So to me, this mentorship increases the chances you're going to keep that new employee and then, you know, not have to worry about staffing that case again in the future.
Well, and it doesn't have to be for months, you know.
No, exactly.
So we're not talking about sending out people to, you know, two people to a client for weeks on end,
right?
You know, just making sure that it's along the same lines as when you have a client that could benefit from having a physical therapist come over, if you have that capability, mm-hmm. at no charge, to identify maybe some exercises that the aide could be doing with that person or something like that. I mean, mm-hmm. there's all kinds of ways to make sure that people feel supported and like they're part of an actual team. It's, home care is a lonely business when you're out there on your own. You know, you don't have necessarily, like, it's not like hospice where they have IDT meetings and they at least pull the teams together, you know? Right. And at home health care, they do generally, mm-hmm. but in private duty home care, there were times when I had my agency, there were times when I didn't see a staff member for months. And thank goodness I was still on paper. That's how long ago this was. But that was the only time I saw them. They
had to turn in. Yeah.
So every 2 weeks, you know, but then they just started leaving it in the mailbox. Even then I didn't see them. So, you know, ways of having, you know, some connection with your people. So mm-hmm. there's not this like big gap between the people in the office and the people in the field. It just needs to happen.
Well, and the mentorship could include little touches like a FaceTime call from the mentor. It doesn't always have to be them in the same place at the same time. But I think, you know, if you structure a program like that, you're going to be really well off in the long
Absolutely.
Run.
Absolutely.
And it's a career path for that mentor.
Sure.
I was going to say, I know, Kristen, you were talking a lot about making sure that you're doing different things to retain those rock star staff as well. And for folks who get that sense of accomplishment from watching somebody else grow, from like being involved, you're giving them a stake in the success of another employee. And I think if they're the right persona, you know, I'm excited to see that report you mentioned, but if they're, I feel like at least one of those personas, probably more given our industry, that would be a real draw for them to stay with your agency and really see the results of their mentorship.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, technology lends itself to this being much easier now. You don't have to have people come into the office, make phone calls, you know, actual phone calls. It's so much easier to connect with people now. This should not be painful for anybody. So it's totally doable.
Kristen, Michael Mitchell is asking, do you see clients moving toward private care versus agency care?
I feel like people are going to need all of the care ultimately. Michael, I assume you mean private care, like hiring somebody privately versus going through an agency. So I'll address that. If I'm wrong, just pipe in or, you know, jump in and let me know. But so I think, again, that goes back to public perception and public education, I think, when it comes down to if you're going to hire somebody privately. I don't think that the vast majority of people that hire privately understand the liability that they're setting themselves up for when they hire privately. I'm totally guessing here, but my guess is that the vast majority of private hired caregivers are not set up as a business, are not carrying liability insurances and you know, whatever else they're supposed to carry, bonded and insured, however, whatever that's called. So ultimately you're setting yourself up as an employer, and then are, you know, liable for their taxes if they fall down at your house, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that is an important piece for the home care industry to make sure that the public understands. And that's been an uphill battle to get that. And of course, you know, of course, for some people, it's just going to come down to the bottom line, like whether it's, you know, this much an hour or this much an hour, I'm going with the cheaper one. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, it's getting there. I don't know that I would say that I feel like more people are going to move toward private care versus agency care. I don't know that I would agree with that completely. Now, if the money isn't available for these types of services to be there for people that can't afford them privately, then there's going to be a lot of people that are just going to go without care completely. So that's why, you know, the Medicaid monies, the home and community-based services monies, they have to be increased. They have to be earmarked for more home care because people need them. There's a huge jump in the number of Medicare Advantage plans coming onto the market in 2023. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of you have seen this, but it's almost double what it is currently. So obviously, those plans are identifying that there's people out there that will take advantage of it. So they're all out there.
While folks are typing, Kristen, if questions jump to mind immediately after we hang up, as I feel like happens a lot, where's the best place for folks to reach out to you to learn more about NAC?
So you can reach me at my email address is the first letter K, Wheeler, Wheeler, at NAC.org. So by all means, feel free. Michael, I'm just looking at your chat about the Workers' Bill of Rights. There's also a domestic Workers' Bill of Rights legislation that they're trying to pass on a federal level. Right now, it's not getting any real steam under it. So, but know in advance that we are keeping a very close eye on that, and because it would put a huge burden on providers. So we are well aware of those workers' bills of rights that are out there. I get what they're trying to do, and I know that they're trying to protect the worker, and we're by no means trying to not protect the worker, but we also are trying to protect the providers, and they just need to make sure that the language reflects that. So yeah, we're on top of that one for sure.
If you have a story that you'd like to share on the podcast, or you have a request for any topics we can cover, I'm most easily reachable on LinkedIn as Amanda Sternklar, Sternklar. And Linda, where can folks find you?
Also on LinkedIn, the name you see on the screen, Linda Leakley, Leekley. My email is my full name at homecarepulse.com. So feel free to email me as well. What are some websites that you would recommend people check out?
So like I said earlier, check out your state associations. Most state associations' websites are just a fountain of information. If you want to look at the legislative stuff, by all means, look at like congress.gov. You can follow any one of the legislative items I mentioned. If you want to check out the Home Care Workforce Action Alliance, we can be found at homecareaction.com. And of course, you can find anything about the National Association for Home Care at NAHC.org.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, be the squeak you want to hear.
And just a reminder to any folks who are listening to this as a podcast later, that if you'd like to be one of the folks asking questions, you can join us for Vision Live. We meet every other Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, and you can go to homecarepulse.com/podcast to sign up. If you're one of the folks listening live and you want to be able to listen to this great conversation again, this recording will be up as a podcast next week. Again, you can find it at homecarepulse.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, Kristen, again, so much for joining us.
Oh, yes, Kristen, what an amazing conversation. Thank you for taking time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for the invite. It was lovely to see you both. I know I won't see you two in St. Louis, but looking forward to seeing the HCP rock stars over there too. And call me if you need me.
Thanks so much.
Thanks everyone.
Bye,
for everyone. Joining us.
Bye.